Now, would you give me some account of what you did yesterday?
Yesterday? Well, I thought what we did yesterday was get things all signed and straightened out and ready to go for this morning, which we did auditing this morning.
Did auditing this morning? You got teams, auditing teams all straightened out. I suppose probably everybody's unhappy with these teams. Everybody's probably very miserable with the whole thing. Now, with team assignment, you did run something you wouldn't mind remembering, something you wouldn't mind forgetting. If I had a simpler and yet slightly therapeutic process, believe me, we would be using that right at this moment. Okay, now we got this far. What we are learning here is auditing. Let me make that a very, very clear thing. We're learning auditing. Now, in the old time training, pilots, you know, they used to learn to fly by the seat of their pants. And very often, years afterwards, well, you'd get one of these pilots on the airmail or something, and the airs he had learned to fly with, he was still busily flying. He would fly with his left wing a little bit low, and he would land a little unbalanced the other way. And this was routine. This was the way he flew. Well, now that is all right. There's nothing wrong with a pilot flying with his left wing a little bit low. But it's our job here to get straightened out whatever bugs one may have picked up along the line. The essence of auditing today is an ability on the part of an auditor to carry through with the process, no matter how much it is changing the PC. Now this is a weird thing. This is real weird. You'll discover that an auditor in the old days doing a duplication back and forth with the pre-clear would get into the most interesting type of setup you ever saw. The pre-clear would change, so the auditor would change the process. In other words, he'd duplicate the pre-clear. Pre-clear would start to change, you see, so the auditor would change the process. This happened all too many times, but remember, this horrible thing happens to have some truth in it, but the process which turned on a somatic will turn it off. That's a gruesome fact. So we have a situation where an auditor may have picked up, this, not this one, but he may have picked up certain observational points. See, he may have picked up certain things and observing pre-clears and so forth, and he may be, all unknowns to himself after he's done an awful lot of auditing, inclining in some direction of a process shift or some favorite activity that he would engage on at a certain moment when the pre-clear was doing this and that, which are not necessarily bad, but they may not necessarily be good. Now, the essence of communication lag is the first thing we've got to get very, very thoroughly. Now, Peggy is a good auditor, and I love her very, very dearly. She told me yesterday noon and didn't realize she had told me, and so therefore I shouldn't tell on her in front of all these people. She pulled a boo-boo of considerable magnitude without realizing she had done it. She let a pre-clear talk to her day and night on an obsessive comm lag without recognizing that this pre-clear really had no need to talk or anything else. I know this pre-clear. I know this pre-clear vividly well. In 2 hours of auditing, I was able to get in 3 auditing commands. You talk about an obsessive communication flow. See? Obsessive. It's not particularly sequitur. It's not particularly related to anything. And to let this pre-clear get away with this for 3 days and nights is a very, very poor auditing show. It really is. One should not go to the lengths of strangling the pre-clear if this pre-clear keeps on talking obsessively. But let's look at it. Let's face up to the fact that a communication lag means the length of time intervening. You see, there's distance on communication. Well, there's also time between cause and effect, you see. And the more time, the less A, the less affinity, you see. The more time, the less reality. The more time, the less communication. So When we get that factor of time in there, time being a symbol aberrating factor, the definition is the length of time from the moment that the auditor, or you as a person in conversation, ask a question or request some data. And when that exact question and the exact answer to that data is forthcoming from the preclear. Now, it's the length of time between those two incidents, question, answer. And it doesn't mean an answer off to the side. That's not an answer. It doesn't mean a lot of cross backflow to find out what you meant by the question. See, that's all time. It doesn't matter what goes on between the moment the question is asked and the moment it is answered. It just does not matter what goes on. If the preclear goes out and climbs the Alps in the interim, that's still comlag. You walked up to this taxi driver in 1930 and you said, "Where is the city hall?" Now, this taxi driver may since have driven all around the town, have been fired, have gone into other employ, may have become a streetcar conductor, may have become a cop, may have become president, and so forth. The truth of the matter is, he never told you and has not told you to this date where the city hall is. So that is all comlac. We've got 14 years here, let us say, or 24 years, or 34 years, or 44 years. It just would not matter if the question hasn't been answered so calmly. We don't care who this taxi driver has talked to. If he has written you letters in the meantime, if he's given evidence before the grand jury or McCarthy, it just doesn't matter. It is still comlag. That the question never gets answered still doesn't alter the basic definition. This fellow is then comlagging. All right, now let's get an example of it. Here's an accident victim on the street. You walk up to this accident victim. You say, "How do you feel?" The accident victim is unconscious, lying there, bleeding, all pushed in from all corners. Never answers your question. Kind of obvious, isn't it? Never answers your question. Yet you asked it. So from that moment, from there on to the end of this universe, that is still a comlag in progress, isn't it? And that is why a phrase gets hung up in a reactive bank. There are no phrases that simply miss the reactive bank entirely. See? It's never resolved, it's never answered. Now do you see what the content of an engram is? It's total comlag. Everything there is in the engram bank is a comlag. So you ask this person, "How do you feel?" Do you know that question will go on from now till the end of this universe as part of some engram? Now there's some responsibility on the person asking the question, isn't there? And we go out and we ask this bright young girl who is selling soda pop or something, we say, "Where's the city hall?" And she says, "Well, it's two blocks down the street, and turn to your right, and it's one block, and that's the city hall." No comlag there. It isn't aberrative either, to you or to her. No aberrative factor involved in it whatsoever. See, it cleared the computer. All right, now we say to this bright young girl, "How do you feel?" She says, "Oh, I feel okay today. I know I felt a lot better sometimes. I had a big party last night, but I feel okay." No aberrative quality whatsoever. None. You follow me? Now, supposing we said to this young girl, "How do you feel today?" And she says, "Well, I don't know. I think it all works. I stand here, some soda pop. Stand here. You know, My family objected to me selling soda pop. I know when I was at Vassar, I know my father wrote me a letter and he said, 'Grace,' he says, 'soda pop and you just won't ever mix.' That's what he said. What happened to your question? How do you feel? What happened to your question? All right, you walk up to this adding machine, and you punch some buttons. Bong, bong, bong. You don't pull a handle. You go off and leave it. Leave the whole thing alone. When this poor accountant, who is stupid enough not to pull a handle before he starts counting, he walks over and he's got the company vouchers for that month. And he goes, pingity, pingity, ping, pingity, pingity, ping, bangity, bangity, bang, bangity, bangity, bang, bangity, bangity, bang, cronk, cronk, bang. Wrong answer. And he says, hey, wait a minute. Wait a minute, what's this all about? Okay. Tell you what it's all about. You ask this person who is lying there unconscious after the street action, you say, how do you feel? You walked up to an adding machine, bingity, bingity, bing, bing, and not pulled the answer. You not pulled the totaler. And she's selling soda pop on the street some years later. Somebody walks up to her and says, how do you feel? And she says, when Pop said to me when I was at Vassar, I remember very well, he wrote me a letter and he said, Grace, soda pop and you will just never mix. Well, years go by and somebody walks up to her in the sanitarium, because you see you're totally responsible. Walks up to her in the sanitarium and says to her, Grace, how do you feel? They're still adding figures into this column of figures, see? They're still trying to get this thing to multiply everything by five or do something, you see? And it just, your computer doesn't work that way. Understand this a little better now? What is this thing called an engramic phrase? Why is it aberrant? Well, we get this fact. Life is a peculiar thing. The one thing that cannot as is in life. Now, you listen, you guys remember this, because I'm never going to tell you again, I'm sure, because it's so damned obvious. This is one of those horrible obvious things, you know, that just sort of flies by. You never pay much attention to it. But do you know what? There's only one thing that cannot as is. When we say as is, we mean erase or disappear or have nothing made of it. What is that? Nothing. That's very close to it, because that's one of the factors involved with it. Nothing, see? Freedom won't erase. Now, we can look all we want to at this dwindling spiral and say, aren't these people awfully bad off, and everybody's going to the dogs, and they all wind up in the dregs. But the funny part of it is that the only thing it'll erase there is the M theta. The freedom will not erase. I almost went into convulsions once. The freedom. Now let's take this and we say, all these good qualities, actually good qualities. Freedom, presence, demonstrated abilities. What happens is they don't erase at all. An individual simply turns away from them and starts looking at mass and M theta. And as long as he's over here looking at M theta, any freedom or courage or anything else that he has that he considers to be a good quality is simply going begging, because it is not a quantitative quality. It is simply qualitative. It's not quantitative. Freedom is not quantitative. Mass is quantitative. But freedom isn't. Thus you get races of man always going forward toward higher levels of freedom. Thus you get all kinds of activity on the part of man to be better, to make things better. You get activity in general on the part of life to go on, coming on up the line, making things squared around a little bit better. There's only one thing that functions anywhere, and that is life. The only thing that can happen to life, even though the individual is actually totally free, even at the moment he's telling you this, he is actually totally free. He has courage. He is able to do a tremendous number of things. The only thing that he can do is, in that freedom, turn around and fixate his attention on something that is not free, that is not courageous, that is not many other things. See, he fixes his attention on some kind of a mass. You understand? And then he can say, I am part of that mass. But why does he do this? Because he wants it to be free too. And that is the pathetic part of existence. The only traps that can possibly exist because of a desire to further free or further help things that are in trouble, things that are in mass. Now, if you actually do have a key that opens traps and locks, you are perfectly at liberty to go over and open all kinds of traps and locks. But as anybody knows, to rescue his liege lord from the castle while armed, while beautifully armed with a skewer taken out of the cooking fire, and while faced with a moat, bastions, Greek fire, and very well accoutred and plated archers, is folly. But life loves folly. And if you want to define folly, it is somebody coming up to set you free. Now, a little child sees another little child that's had polio, and this little child says, "Well, let's try that person should have polio, see?" And goes over. You see little kids do this. One day, you're processing, you're crippled. You want to know when this person first got crippled. And you say to them, all of a sudden, sympathy, feeling of rapport with, effort to help. So the little child, well, they didn't have the clue, did they? They didn't have the information. They did not have the data. There is a gimmick involved in entrapment. You have to know how to as-is a problem. You have to know how to as-is mass and space, too. In other words, when I say as-is it, I mean make a perfect duplicate of it. You have to know how to do that, all right? So we look over this business of life, this gain called life, and we find an individual, if he were totally free, would have no gain. So he actually has to actually consciously step down from a higher activity of freedom in order to have a gain or have any mass around at all. You see, the existence of that, the smallest piece of mass would be a barrier. See, this to that degree, a pebble out here in the street is a barrier, but you wouldn't think much as a barrier. Next thing you know, the pebble is the size of the castle wall. See, it's a real barrier. Next thing is the size of the universe. Being trapped in this universe is something on the order of being caught in a matchbox. Here's this huge, powerful individual, and he's standing there outside the matchbox, looking at the matchbox, saying, "Boy, I wonder how I'll ever get out of that matchbox." This is the silly aspect which life presents to individuals. All right, we cannot erase or as is make a perfect duplicate of freedom. You make a perfect duplicate of nothing, and you will, of course, still have the same thing you started out with, nothing. You make a perfect duplicate of no barriers, and of course you have still no barriers. So the only thing you can as is are barriers, actual barriers. You can see a wall, you can make a perfect duplicate of it, and therefore you can vanquish it as a wall. But what do you mean by having a wall around there? You got a wall around there in the first place because you wanted to gain. All right. Let's take a look at this whole problem of communication lag, and we discover an enormous drive on the face of life, everywhere at sea, to free. And of course, that includes computers, doesn't it? That includes computers. Free a computer. This thing's got a datum jammed in it. Somebody walked over to it and punched on it while it was unconscious. How do you feel? You get the idea? Now, the person to whom it was asked will suddenly notice the existence of a former computation, a former figure on the machine. You as an auditor would notice this former figure on the machine, and you would say, "Hey, let's free that computer." It is a handy Jim Dandy little mechanism built into every computer, that life has to be present somewhere in its vicinity for any mass or computer to exist. If life, to any degree, is present, then it will try to free the caught data, the untabulated, unsolved, you get it, datum, the unanswered datum, unsolved datum, same thing, in that computer. See? And so up it comes through the engram bank. So we ask this person, "How do you feel?" They tell you about soda pop and Vassar. What's happening here? This person started in to free the computer, suddenly hit too many points that had never been tallied. See? And they just stopped right there. Shortening a communication lag is the manifestation of actually freeing out of the computer all the JM data in it on that subject. And that is what is shortening a communication lag. That's why a short communication lag is something an auditor works for and watches for. He sees this communication lag close in, get shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter, and all of a sudden, ping. What's happened here? The individual has simply as-ised out of the computer, one way or the other, all the data that was jamming the computer. And so, in straight wire, you're unjamming computers. Don't think you're doing anything else in straight wire. That's all you're doing. Unless you give it some very fancy wrinkles, it's a very simple process. You can give straight wire some very fancy wrinkles, still legitimately. You can ask a fellow, tell some lies about your past. You can ask him to mock up an action in the present, then put it into the past, and then recall it. He will be deluged instantly with data that he has long forgotten. You can do all kinds of things. I mean, computers can be handled in the most remarkable ways. We talk about human memory, phooey. I mean, there's no worry about this at all. The only reason a person cannot remember is because he is facing a computer that he expects to remember. He will know the computer is fixed when it remembers. You see? And then he'll say, see, I fixed the computer. Pretty good. Hey, he never gets to throw his skull, and what you're asking him to do is actually to know the answer. Because you see, he doesn't have to have the answer out of that computer at all. He doesn't have to have the computer tell him a thing. It's just a gimmick, a gadget. It has no more importance than the vending machines down at the Greyhound bus station. I mean, are you terribly concerned at this moment over the vending machines at the Greyhound bus station? I'm sure you're not, but believe me, if you had a job filling them and keeping them running and so forth, why, boy, you'd sure be happy. Every time somebody called up and told you, you'd be real sad. They called and tell you, your vending machine number 62, it's just not working today. You'd go rushing down there and you'd fix the gimmicks and take out the old slugs and coins from some bygone age and the chewing gum that people had jammed in the slots, you know, and you'd free up the levers that were jimmied by the kids trying to get a second bar out when the first was delivered, and you just fix it up and you drop in your nickel and it gives you a candy bar. Bang! Just like that. So, another nickel, give you a candy bar. Fine. Fixed. Oh, we're all set. You feel real good about the whole situation. So would the person who called you up. There's something horribly frantic about a machine not doing what it's supposed to do. You see? It's not free to that extent. It is enslaved in some fashion. All right. Now, let's look at this communication lag and look at the N-gram bank and so forth and just add this up. You know a tremendous amount of data about this. Let's think it over for a moment. What you thinking it over with? I asked you to think it over for a moment. You did. Now, what are you thinking it over with? What you thinking it over with, Mary?
I'm not sure.
Well, we'd say the first thing you were thinking it over with was an uncertainty.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
As a matter of fact, that was exactly what I was working on as I thought it over. saying, well, in some banks, the uncertainties are much bigger than in others. Roofers are more powerful and cover more space at the time. So that was clearly it.
Sure.
What'd you do?
I know something about this. And if I fiddle around with it, something messed up here, so I'll just let it go with knowing that some things started to come in.
You just let it go with knowing this? Well, I want you to look over something. But the power of interest, the ability to compel interest by one of these circuits, is a fabulous and wonderful thing. One of these computers is set up basically to be interesting. So when a person starts to think with one, it's a very interesting operation. It is actually a computer itself places a communication lag into knowingness. Do you see that? All right, now let's say that you were a Japanese mathematician. I've known some of these boys, they're fantastic. And you could look at a column of figures and write down the answer. You know, you look at the column, you write down the answer. Fascinating. They're actually trained to do that, in that they've been told that this is possible, and then they stand around and work on it and look at columns of figures, and finally they develop the facility. Or do they simply become free enough as people to simply look at a column of figures and know the answer? You get the idea. There isn't any reason why time has to intervene at all. What's mystifying about his looking at this column of figures and writing down the answer is the fact that no time has intervened, you see. Bang! He's got the answer. Well, we think the nice thing to do, the pleasant thing to do, the polite thing to do, and the time-tracking thing to do, and therefore we can get mixed up so it's the survival thing to do, is simply to look at a column of figures, you see, and then take some time and go through some sort of rote process, you see, by which you will arrive at an answer at the bottom of the column. All right, we arrive at this answer very nicely at the bottom of the column. Now, what are we using to arrive at that answer? We are using something which isn't really made out of machinery. It's called mathematics. It is a system of vias by which you can derive the answer without having to know it. Something by which you can derive an answer without having to know the answer. You don't have to burden yourself or make your game liable to your total knowingness. See, if you got up toward total knowingness, you'd know what the enemy was doing and what you were doing and what all of this. You could know all these. But you also have to figure out that there's something to know. That's the other gimmick. People go around working harder to get something to know, you see. That fellow builds up this tremendous structure, a pyramid, and has labyrinths inside of it and sliding stones and all that sort of thing. Just for what? Let's add it up this way. It's something that somebody's going to know eventually. In other words, a secret. So people will actually manufacture secrets so as to invest knowingness in them. I was quite struck by this one time. Bacon is supposed to have left some cryptograms, one kind or another. And I had an officer one time who spent all of his time trying to figure out one of these cryptograms. And I asked him one day, I said, "What, figuring out this cryptogram?" I said, "How do you know there's really an answer to it?" It's utterly assaulted his whole game. You see, it utterly dismayed him. The idea, how do you know there's an answer to this cryptogram? So actually, we had some machines there. We were doing some cryptography, one kind or another. And I added it up. It was ornery of me, but I was feeling overt. And we added it up. And any message has certain repetitive indexes, regardless, you see. The symbols are going to represent something in terms of meaning, but if you write a message, it will have so many articles and so many pronouns and so many this and that in it if you've got much of the message.
demonstrated quite completely that this cryptogram could not possibly have had any message in it. The reason why it couldn't have had any message in it was very easy. There was insufficient repetitive quality to the symbols. Utterly insufficient. Now, here's another example. Somebody, Adams and somebody rather, wrote a book on space, visitors from space, or something like that. It's around in the bookstores right now. And on the back page of this thing, on the back of the cover, it has a message from space. And this is a diagram of the workings of an engine that was left by these scientists from outer space with this fellow, and scientists are now busy trying to figure this out. So I was interested enough in figuring this thing out to take a look at this and recognize something quite cute about it. It has no repetitive cycles. Let's look at a mathematical formula and realize that if you're doing it in calculus, you're going to have a summation sign. It's going to repeat itself. An equals sign will repeat itself. In order to have any kind of mathematics at all, you've got to have repetition of some sort or another. Otherwise, there's no R in it at all. See, no duplication. And if there's no R in it whatsoever, it's just not real. It's just made up. There is no secret there to be learned. So here's this vast number of cockeyed symbols, none of which repeat. As a result, the thing is simply a cooked-up message. It has no secret in it. Now, people, much more significantly, in life at large, actually life at large, really has no secret in it. However, it has a system it is operating with. Let's look at that. It has a system with which it's operating. Why does it have an operating system? Well, it has a game. There's a game quality involved in the thing. All right. In order to have a tree, there have to be certain secrets that aren't secrets. So we get the big secret that there are no secrets. See, that's the biggest secret of all. There are no secrets. So we have to manufacture enough secrets into this computer so that it'll run in the proper vias and go on being a tree. Now we get the secret of osmosis, the secret of seed regeneration, the secret of this, the secret of that. Something will go on compulsively and obsessively setting this thing up and making it go through its paces. It's quite interesting that it does this. Very interesting that it does this. But the secret involved with it, the secret involved with it is that there's no secret involved with it. But something around there thinks there's a secret involved with it and is trying to solve that secret. The effort to solve it is the entrapping mechanism. To look into the workings of a machine in order to erase or vanquish the machine is about the silliest thing you can do. The answer to the machine is the machine. Q&A. An ultimate solution is a perfect duplication of the problem. Is it or isn't it? So a partial duplication of the problem will simply cause a lot of the problem to keep on surviving, won't it? But if you made a perfect duplicate of the problem, you would then have its solution. If it disappeared, it certainly wouldn't be a problem anymore. Is that right? You wouldn't have any mass either, would you? You get the idea? All right, if we're trying to solve problems, then it must be that we are trying to bring about a vanishment of the complications of the problem. In the only way, a total vanishment, an ultimate vanishment of all of the odds and ends of the problem, so there'll be no further answers necessary. You know, ultimate solution, crunch. There'll be no further problems out of this automobile.
Well, now, you know very well, if you fix the ignition, you fix the spark plugs and so forth, you know you're going to have future problems with that automobile. You know very well you're going to have. Run it at the reductio ad absurdum, run it 100,000 miles, and if you don't at least have a tire problem with that car, it'll be a very silly thing, you see. Now, therefore, if you are trying to solve all the problems connected with this car, the funny part of it is that the answer is no car. You see that? Now, oddly enough, here you are in a bug. Now, let's go into this very sharply here. Here you are in a body, at first walking from place to place and wishing you had a car so that you wouldn't have to walk. So you get a car, you see, and then that pulls your body around so that you don't have to walk. And you say, I have solved a problem. Have you? No, a great many other problems will immediately come up, not the least of which is the finance company. There's the finance company. And then there's there'll be the slight problem of the fact that you won't feel so good because you're not getting any exercise. You see, your legs now are dependent upon a car, so they aren't getting use, so they don't feel important. And put less communication to your legs, so the next thing you know, you've got arch trouble or something. Nobody ever got arch trouble through walking, by the way. They only got arch trouble through not walking. You'll find the only engram that is aberrative is the engram which didn't include any action, but included energy. You had the machine, and you didn't use it. That kind of thing. So you really put up against it this way. You either solve it, or you use it. There's no other compromise with any gimmick that you have. Either solve it completely, or use it. And if you have something you're not using, why, throw it away, for heaven's sake. Run it in a ditch. Give it to somebody else so he'll have a problem. But if you're not using a body, such as some catatonic, or somebody in a fit someplace in the hospital, you're not using this body, what are they doing there? What are they doing there? Well, they've got something, they didn't use it, and now they can't. The decrease of ability. Not using one's legs brings about difficulties with one's legs. In other words, not handling it, not managing it, not keeping it running. What it does is hang up in the track in an approximation of nothingness again. No-ness, see? Only in this case, no-doingness is the only no-ness about it. So there is a gradient scale here descending into heavier and heavier mass of nothing. See this gradient scale descending into heavier and heavier mass? Well, it starts the very top lines of it that we would be most acquainted with, and before you get into actual mass, you have the no to mystery scale, or the no to secret scale. That is the top crust of this gradient scale. Actually repeats itself, as you go on down in mass. Heavier and heavier. All this is looking, you might say, is a condensed knowingness. You put out something there to look at so that you can, by looking at it, know about it. Now we go into emotion. We are beginning to use particles. You are knowing with emotion. Now effort, you know with effort. Now thinking, then you're figuring with computers. You're not long knowing any longer. You're using computers, a brain, something like this. And then in order to give it energy, this is the silliest thing of all, to feed something energy, you eat. And then to get further on the track and so forth, you get into sex, and then, of course, sooner or later, everything is going to get to be a secret. This is the most obvious conclusion you can reach. But here's the commonest manifestation. Let's say you have a big car, and you set it in the garage, and you didn't use it, and it sat there for a couple of years. You go out, and you step on its starter. You know very well it won't start. So you go out and get a new battery, and you put in it, and then you start to start it again. And of course, it won't start. The rubber is pretty shot, and so this and that. And you practically rebuild this car that's been sitting in the garage for a couple of years, but it still won't start, and that's the secret. That's the ultimate secret. We don't know why this car won't start. It's a secret. Well, the solution to the car
was an as-ising of the car, of course. Now, let's see how far down a guy goes. He goes down this scale from no down through secrets. You see, just in a very heady plunge. He gets down into the secrets band. And then it's his identity is a secret, and everybody else's identity is a secret, but everything is a secret, a secret, a secret. This guy is stupid. He at last can't find anything, any place, you know. The whenness and awareness of everything is lost. And that's the definition of stupidity. The only real thing about stupidity is that the whenness and awareness have disappeared. You ever lose something? It makes you feel good and stupid, doesn't it? Well, where the devil did I put that? Big calm rank. Where did I put that? When did I have it last? Where, when? Well, maybe you do not have much money. Maybe you're in a strange area and you don't have much money, and it was all in your wallet, and your wallet disappeared. It just disappeared. You reached into your pocket to pay for your breakfast or something, and your wallet was gone. You go back and you look in your room and it's not there. You haven't talked to anybody recently. You feel sort of disturbed and stupid, wouldn't you? You feel sort of disturbed, upset. You'd have an anxiety about something. You'd want to know where that wallet was. You'd have problems right away, wouldn't you? Right away you'd have problems. But you'd feel kind of stupid. Do you realize there are people around that have that as their common feeling about life? I mean, they got that all the time, see. It's all lost. When the awareness of everything is really gone. You're standing right in front of them, and you say to them, how are you, or something of the sort. They don't know you're there. They give you some long calm language, way off the beat, way off. How do you feel? They say, pop bottles. They hardly know you're standing in front of them. All right? You're lost, too. And if they had to consider people, they would say you really ought to be very suspicious of people because they have a tremendous number of secrets, and you don't quite know their intentions, and you have to be very careful of people because this all comes out of whenness and whereness, something you should remember in auditing people. Now you get them going around and you at least find where and when the walls are, and the spots in the room. You would just be utterly amazed how this will snap somebody upscale. What you're getting there with AC is the whenness and awareness. Now you ask somebody straight wire, you want to know the whenness and awareness. Even though you're asking them to tell you lies, you know, you ask them overtly to tell you lies, you want to know the whenness and awareness. The whenness and awareness. The reason I've got a broken leg is because an elephant trampled on me. And you say, when? And, he says, it's last night, about 10 o'clock. Where? Down in the corner. It's upsetting to him. You're asking him to be responsible for the positioning in time and space of an incident. He has common lags because he can't place the missing lines. He can't place the missing things. Now, the solution to the problem is the problem. That's the total solution. Let's see if this works out. All right. The fellow has an automobile. It's getting him a lot of trouble. He's got a lot of problems with the automobile. Let's say he simply throws away the automobile. Let's say he has this. This is just as is where it was created, and the automobile simply disappears in every last particle right where it is. Boom! There's certainly going to be no further problem from this automobile. You have given an ultimate solution for this automobile, but you say, now I have to walk every place. Okay, now let's take a look at this. This then is a problem. It's a problem, and it would not have been a solvable problem if we didn't have a little more knowingness on this. We know an individual is an awareness of awareness unit. And as an awareness of awareness unit, an individual then really doesn't need a computer. All right, he doesn't need a body to move around unless he wants a game, you see. and so on. Actually, he can manufacture enough sensation, he can manufacture enough of anything if he wants this, but he wants a game. But he's got a body there. We're trying to solve the problem of having gotten rid of the automobile. Got rid of the automobile, made a problem right away because you had to move your body around. Let's as is the body, just make it disappear right where it is. And what would you discover? You find the individual probably his perceptions cut down one way or the other. He would be being asked to move these machines around. What you're doing is looking for him. Let's as is all these machines. Bang. You know, the Thetans machinery. Let's as is all those machines. Bing. Do you realize that you have a completely free moving, freely perceiving, can be any place it wants to be, individual? Do you see this? Well, even working out my test. Processing demonstrates that. Anytime you have mass, you have a problem. Anytime you have any mass of any kind whatsoever, for any purpose whatsoever, you've got a problem. Mass is a problem because mass is a barrier. The only real problems are those which barrier against freedom. Freedom won't erase. See, the basic problem is a matter of barriers. Any mass can be a problem. Why is it they want these problems? Gee, that's an interesting thing. And he wants a game. He wants to have somebody else. He wants to have a playing field. He wants mass. Gives him something to be interested in. He should be active about it. He can build things. He can do all sorts of things. A tremendous, the entire array of life lies out in front of you. What can a Thetan do? How many problems could he have? Well, how many spaces are there in all the universes there are? Lots of spaces. How many objects are there in all the universes there are? Lots of objects. How many particles are there in all the universes there are? That's a lot of particles. Well, add to it, how many considerations can a Thetan make? And how many considerations could all of the awareness of awareness units in all universes, how many considerations could they make? Well, add all those figures together that I've been telling you, and you'll have the answer as to how many problems there are. Any descent from freedom will bring about problems. As long as the individual is competent of his ability to handle problems and to resolve them in finer parts of them, you see, take a big problem and resolve some fine part of this problem. As long as the individual can do this, he can go on looking forward to other problems and stay interested in life and a lot of other things. He can communicate, he can have masses, and he thinks this is fine. If we were to take everything away from him, he would be a very unhappy thing. Now, he'd be totally free, but he'd be very unhappy. Why would he be so unhappy? Wouldn't have any problems. Wouldn't have anything to solve. And this is what we run up against in every free clearing process. The first and foremost thing we run up against is no matter how bad trouble. Once in a while, by the way, I have seen an individual who considered himself to be in a sufficient amount of trouble. Ran into a fellow in the jail one day. And he was really convinced that he had enough problems for the moment. He was totally convinced. I know because I tried to run problems on him. I got enough, he says. Wow, that's automatic answer, I says. So, well, let's come on, let's get some more problems. Well, no kidding, I got enough. Enough problems. Well, what are some of these problems? He did, too. He had enough problems. First place, he was there because of a crime he didn't commit, but the moment that he confessed to not having committed this crime, he would have been jailed for a worse crime, which he really had done. Furthermore, his mother was quite upset and quite ill, and his wife didn't have any money, and he had a couple of kids. They didn't have any food. He had no bond he could post, any kind at all. He was not very healthy himself. He had enough problems. 20. You know, that was a very immediate affair. Do you realize he wouldn't have been sitting there in jail if he hadn't been trying to make problems for himself? See? One time I was at a court-martial. I was the summary court's counsel for an enlisted man while I was in the hospital. And this summary court was meeting and convening upon the fact, I think he'd been found without an ID card or something of the sort. But he had really messed himself up. He'd started to fight the shore patrol, and he'd, mopery and dopery on the high seas, strictly. They had him, they had practically thrown the book at him, and I was his counsel. In looking this situation over, because I was tremendously interested in human reaction and how this all worked out, so on, this was a very early observation of this, very early, 1945, this observation was made. This fellow had been brought out of a war zone and had been placed in the hospital. He had argued with the doctors about being placed in the hospital, but they had merely assumed that he must be nuts not to want to be in a nice hospital. And so they had given him a bad time, but he had lain there for days and days and days before all this occurred, realizing that there was nothing for him to do, nothing for him to think about, there was nothing on the future track, there was absolutely nothing for him to worry about, and he had entered into the state known as 2.5 boredom. And he was very solidly bored. He was actually achingly desperate because nothing was going to occur. And then without letting his right hand know what his left was doing, he left his ID card, for being a very punctual sailor and so forth, left his ID card in his locker, very carefully, went into an out-of-bounds area, managed to make enough noise and confusion so the shore patrol would come up, and then beat up the shore patrol, and then had quite a few problems right away. I got him off on the basis that he'd been returned from a combat zone and probably was not quite right in the head. Actually, he was quite right in the head. This is just what you can expect an awareness-awareness unit to do. Given minus problems, to find plus problems, quick. Now, here's this fellow, he exteriorizes. By the way, this happened to me one time. I'm a long time back on the track. Seemed to have had a penchant for bombs blowing up in my face, or something of that happened in the last war, as happened here and there. But in trying to look over all the stacked facsimiles which are on this, I found there's too many. I got weary on the whole subject. I found out that in a moment of upset, I had a bomb pitched at me, which caused plus randomity, really plus randomity, because there was already a lot of excitement going on, and there was no intention at all to make the world rougher for the people who tossed this nice little grenade. And it blinded me very perfectly. This was a long time ago. Blinded me. So I went around playing the beautiful sadness for about 7 years of being very, very blind. And this was a very, very interesting state, I'm sure. Trying to carry out campaigns and maps and draw fortifications and so forth without any eyesight was about as many problems as you could handle. So I was having a good time doing this. And then some son of a gun tossed another shell into the middle of a command post. And that was the end of that body. This body got draped on an electric fence, a high voltage electric fence. And all of a sudden, I was about, I'd say 25 feet behind it, with complete, full, bright visio. It was a beautiful, beautiful, sunshiny, snowy day. And there were green, small green trees growing on the other side of this fence. And there I was. You never saw such scenery. It was just beautiful, and the situation that I had just departed from, however, was quite hectic, but it was utterly beyond me to do anything about it then, because this shelling of this command post was finished for the war. And that was the end of that. And no problems left. All would be peace after that on that planet, the cinch. And the beautiful, clear, so on. I enjoyed it for a while, went off and lived in the woods for a while, lonesome. Finally got acquainted with some rabbits and deer, you know, just a nice sylvan existence, no problems. Brought it over for a couple of hundred years or something like this, but... They say I got pretty bored, pretty bored. And the next thing I did immediately after that was I found a nice, upset, sad, plus randomity individual. And put a beam in the center of his head. Boom, see? In I went, of course, managed to forget all the rest of this very nicely. And boy, did I have lots of problems. Lots of problems, right away. Plenty of problems. Well, now, in writing the history books, we would think of something as being bad luck, or he had a hard life. Why do they write so many books about people who have a hard life? And I dare say your interest in, or your ability to find a book about somebody who had a soft life from one end to the other, down at the local library, would be unattainable. We look at a book with no action, no emotion. This guy was happy all of his life. And my family, everything was happy. Joy, everything was fine. There's no books like that down in the library. Not enough problems. Well, what are we up against then when we start to work with a pre-kid? What are we up against? This person is causing more randomity or upset for others around him. Than is necessary, and he has reduced his ability far below what it would have to be to have problems. So his problems have become petty and internal, and to that degree, the society at large and its ability to progress and so forth is interrupted to just this degree. This fellow has deserted the upper dynamics. He's gotten down to first dynamic problems. Then's about the time that you and me ought to really get in there and pitch. Why? Because this individual is going around offering himself as a problem to everybody, and they don't particularly need him as a problem. Following? Another thing, an individual can be so immersed in his problems that he entirely loses any fun in having them. And about the only crime that you and I could possibly object to, knowing what we do about problems, all the rest of it, and the life is a problem, and any piece of mass is going to be, is, or is composed as, and was born as, a problem. Knowing this, then the only thing we could object to, even vaguely, is no fun. See, that's the one thing we might object to. And as we look out in all directions in life, the one thing that an auditor legitimately, right there according to his own feelings and according to his own theory and his practice and everything else, the only thing he'd really object to is the fact that no fun is occurring. There is no sport, there is no joy, there is no feeling of enlightenment or glee or anything else by the reason of being alive. When whole society gets to the point where it's all a working proposition and there's no fun to be found or undertaken in it, well, somebody ought to take a hand. As far as I can see in existence, as far as randomity is concerned, it is a very bad thing to approach any trap if you don't know anything about traps. Say we have no know-how on the subject of how to unlock computers, how to speed up comm lags, how to get these things out of the machine, how to get the machines out of the guy. Let's say we have no knowledge of this, and then we start to fool around with it. That's going to wind up in no fun, isn't it? Very definitely going to wind up in no fun. Ordinarily, in the absence of know-how, a person has a tendency to become what he fights. For instance, if we ever really wanted communism here, lock, stock, and barrel, the best way in the world to get it would be to fight Russia. Even though we won the war, say, some degree, because you never win a war, they just make more problems. Well, you really see communism. Capitalism has fought communism until the U.S. government now uses as his textbook La Das Kapital. I mean, I don't imagine anybody in the government knows that the principles they're following are contained in Das Kapital. But they are. The basic Marxian principles of taxation are uniformly used now by the U.S. Bureau of Internal Revenue, the Treasury Department, and so forth. They don't even know whose they are. They would be the most upset people you ever heard of if they were to have Das Kapital shoved under their noses and those lines pointed out to them that they were following this. I don't say they should or they shouldn't. But the main thing about this is that here they are in an unknowing sort of way fooling around with, and they're trying to fight against communism, and yet here's some of the dearest principles of communism in full action right here in these United States. All right, if this is the case, then a person can get into a relatively stupid, unknowing, lost state about this whole thing, and he can get down to a point where he doesn't even know it's a game. And when he gets down to the point where he no longer knows it's a game, why, then he has no fun. Well, if you know how to unlock traps, you can successfully and safely fight the gloom and unhappiness of Earth. How could you successfully fight it? Well, you can successfully fight any trap that you can completely unlock. Therefore, an auditor not winning in processing pre-clears, you see, but failing in the processing of pre-clears, could lose and accept some of the philosophies of the law of pre-clears that caused him to lose, you see. See, he can do this. But if he could unlock these things successfully, he would be doing exactly what life is trying to do. Bring it up to a game level, keep it there, if possible. And let's not get so horribly dull about this that we believe that it is gruesome and grim, and we should all be glum, and so on about existence. All right. Another thing about this is an individual still has enormous quantities of freedom, he still has enormous quantities of courage. Courage itself is a very, very tiny particle, but it is so close up to the top of the band that the idea of erasing a person's courage, almost impossible thing. What you can do is make him fight something which is cowardly and then take its aspects, you see, and get him to pretend he is not courageous in this fashion. But you back him out of this and you find him natively courageous, just like that, boom. So we had a student in the advanced clinical course who came around to me after a session of auditing, and we were working with courage at the time. And he says, all that's happened to me is we have erased all the courage in my bank. We're having him put courage in the walls. This was very, very funny. We'd erased all the courage. He had no courage in that. Damn fool had been putting courage in the walls. Up to that time, he'd sat in the back of the class. He never said anything. He never said a word during the whole class. He wouldn't object to an auditor if the auditor had walked all over him while he was on the couch with muddy feet. And he went up to the instructor. He bawled out the instructor. He came up and saw me. Bawled out. Telling us that we had erased all of his courage. Ah, oh, me, it was very funny. Very amusing. We seldom laugh along such lines because it gets so desperate with people. But that is one of the very funny ones. Lack of courage. That's his trouble now. As we look over the field of auditing, we discover that the only thing that might be wrong with auditing would be failing in auditing, and we know this by experience, and that is the main reason why it's wrong. An individual has failed to unlock the computer, has failed to unlock the trap, and so forth. Now, an auditor can get so discouraged about life that he'll stop flattening comm lines. You know, you'll get desperate, you know, and the pre-clear will do this, and it doesn't seem to work in the next 5 minutes, and so he doesn't pay any attention to where the comm lag is, and he runs another question, he runs another computation. The auditor actually is running a cycle of failure. The first and foremost thing we've got to learn then, whatever else I've told you today, the first and foremost thing. You got to learn to repeat that command. And repeat it, 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 with perfect equanimity. Whether it's getting any results or not. See, completely aside from its application, just you, as a person in action, has to be able to tolerate the repetition of the command, even though you know it isn't getting very far. That's a tough thing to learn sometimes. It'll keep you, sometime in the future, when a preacher jumping off the couch needs to be excited by something more than what you're giving them, when needs this or needs that, is in a very desperate state, when the whole family is telling you what a desperate condition this preacher is in, how it's all desperate, how it's all emergency, and so forth, keep you from sitting up all night long trying to figure out this preacher. You know that you will be able to sit there with perfect equanimity and be able to utter an auditing command and make it stick with this preacher and flatten and calm like, despite the family, despite his jumping up and down off the couch, despite this, despite that, you go in there and you flatten the comma. And you'll find out that no matter what you did, if you succeed in flattening just one comma, I'm going to pray clear and get better. Give an example of that. Interesting example of that. We had a boy around here who was in the foul shape you ever saw a body in. He's not in bad shape mentally, he's in bad shape physically. He's really beaten his body up most terrifically. We did an awful lot of processing on this boy. And you know, we were never able to flatten a comma. Why weren't we able to flatten a comma? It didn't matter how long a question was run. The person's still comma-like now. You get the idea? Didn't matter much what question. Well, this went on for an awful long time. We were given awful simple auditing commands. Believe me, they weren't the kind of commands you'd think you'd expect a comma-like on, but they were comma-like on everything. Comma-like on HC, comma-like on everything. You just couldn't flatten the comma-like. And we weren't running process after process, you understand? We were running some very basic processes. And we had to be satisfied with this kind of a flattening. 1 minute. We would bring it out to an even lag of about 1 minute. Can you imagine this? And we had to consider this flat. Kept this up for 80 hours of auditing. An awful lot of auditing. Remember, this person was in bad shape, in a wheelchair, was, by the way, whether he knew it or not, dying of a very, very bad disease. You know, nothing left there to work with, no circuits to patch up, you might say. Might as well have just as is the whole situation. Now, to get him to flatten, one comp lag, pretty rough. And finally, the auditor, with great inspiration, asking this question after we, you know, of course all this was doing him good. With great inspiration, simplified elementary straight wire. This is takes some doing. But he simplified it. He asked the fellow to remember something. And he asked him again to remember something. And he asked him again to remember something. And the next thing you know, I asked that question over many times, he had a flat line. Completely flat. It was fantastic. And he asked him to remember some men, flatten that line. Ask him to remember some women, it flattened that line. Ask him to remember some plant life, and then flatten that line. Fabulous. I mean, this thing was going along at a terrific rate. And that night, for the first time, both the preclear and his attendant were witness to the fact that something terrific had happened. Something terrific happened in this fellow's case. Up to that time, he was very frantic. He had to perform certain body motions before he'd have the least idea that he'd been benefited. You know, walk around the room, wave his arms. Something like this. For totally paralyzed cases, by the way. He'd completely changed his goals after that processing session. In other words, with everything that was being worked with right up to that point, we were always flattening, to some degree, existing comlines. To some degree. But it took that sheer inspiration on elementary straight wire to get for the first time. You talk about physical comm lag. This person's physical comm lags were such that we didn't dare run a physical command on him. It would just have been comm lag from here to the end of this universe. There wasn't anything you could adventure on. So HC was out.
This was in paralysis. Well, as I say, this other remembers something. Let's see if he remembers something. I think the first time he tried this, his car lagged on this thing was probably something there, a matter of about 10, 15 minutes. Quite curious. And that shows you that the fellow had a memory computer, but the computer was completely dead. But in order to get to this case, it required enormous patience on the part of the auditor, enormous patience, to just sit there and ask as insignificant, as meaningless, actually a question, and yet snap this case out of the hospice very easily. You cannot underestimate the importance of being able to sit there and keep cool in any case. Most of us can do this with great ease, but I'm sure even at this stage that some of us present would feel a certain dragging, nagging impatience if we had to repeat an auditing command that we didn't think was getting anywhere over and over for about 4 hours. The same auditing command. And each time have one's voice be just as interested as before, be just as alert, be just as aware of the preclear's reactions, be just as interested in his answer, and carrying forward the session in such a fashion. That's a little piece of skill, isn't it? All right, we're just going to make sure right now, before we get any further with this, that we've got this skill. Okay. Thank you.